Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Hope you all had a great week. Today, I am sharing another masterclass. This time, it is all about sparkling wines of Brazil. I know that Brazil isn't exactly at the tip of our tongue when it comes to discussing sparkling, but after having the opportunity to taste several examples, I am excited to say that they truly are worth seeking out. The class was run by Susanna Gold, a wine and spirits WSET diploma graduate, one of only a handful of Americans who hold the title of Associazione Italiana Sommelier, and she is also a certified specialist in wine and spirits from the Society of Wine Educators. So continue to give a listen and let's learn about sparkling wines of Brazil together. And at the end, if you have a spare moment, would love for you to swipe or swig or whatever it is on your phone or however you are listening to rate and review our podcast so that we can hear what you think about the podcast and also to help others find out about us. Sláinte!
I'm glad that you're here, discovering your inner Brazilian. A tagline that I really like that they have on their towels, discover your inner Brazilian. So I'm first going to just show you a couple of things about Brazil and then show you the new campaign that they're bringing out. So Brazil, Wines of Brazil with an S, Wines of Brazil with an S, but Brazilian wine with a Z. On Twitter and on Instagram, just FYI if you're looking for it. It's a rich and diverse universe of wines and each wine producer, and we have two wine producers here with us today. So if I make a mistake or you want some clarification, we can ask them questions in the back. Cassio from Castelongo and Bruno from Nova Alianza. We also have people from the consulate here, so thank you very much for coming. And, of course, Rafael from Wines of Brazil. And I'm Susanna, you all know me. So what Brazil has discovered is that they have traditions, both old and new, and they are promoting that in their wines. So old because, as you will hear in our discussion, they have a long history in viticulture, and a lot of the people who have founded the Brazilian wine industry are of Italian origin. So they have a very long tradition in wine. And also new, because it is the new world. It's a different climate, a different country, and they bring both of those currents together. So this is the new campaign, and it's called A Sparkling New World, because what we are focusing on in Wines of Brazil are sparkling wine. A completely different sparkling wine. So they say structure is good, but freedom is sparkling. And diversity is good, but dedication is sparkling. So they're very dedicated. They have a diversity of grape varieties that they're focusing on and wine styles, but they're really focused on sparkling wine, especially for the export market. They want to become one of the world-famous wine destinations for sparkling wine. Okay? And you'll see why. They also continue with this campaign. Routine is good, but pleasure is sparkling. And I happen to agree with that. I could drink sparkling wine every day of my life, all day long, at every meal. I don't know about you, but I would be very happy if that were sort of my wine experience. And experience is good, but youth is sparkling, and we can probably all agree about that. The youth is sparkling, and the Brazilian wine industry is young. Everyone I met when I was in Brazil seemed to me to be under the age of, not 40, but 30. I mean, really young. Everybody was very young, and it was exciting. It was exciting to see so many young people involved in the wine industry. Knowledge is good, but vision is sparkling. So let's talk a little bit about the brief history of wine in Brazil. And team Alphonse de Souza, who came from Portugal, and he brought great. So as I was saying, in 1532, Martim Alphonse de Souza came from Portugal, and he started growing grapes. But he started growing grapes in an area in Brazil that was unfortunate and impossible for him to grow grapes. So in northern Brazil. In southeast Brazil, in the Capucins captaincy because Brazil was colonized in the 1500s by the Portuguese. And they created 15 captaincies, that's what they're called, Brazil. But the first time the grapes were brought here was in 1532. Then a member of that same group that had colonized Brazil with these grape varieties decided to try to plant vinifera in a different part of Brazil, also not successful because of the climate. And has anyone, apart from the Brazilians, have any of you guys been to Brazil? And you've been to Brazil? Have you been to the south? No, north. So I had never been to Brazil until January. So my image of Brazil was completely different than the Brazil that I discovered. And maybe yours is too, if you have not been to Brazil. And in 1626, the Jesuits came to Brazil, and they started really growing vinifera, but for church functions. So the church was allowed to grow grapes and use wine, and that was the beginning of the industry. And then Portuguese immigrants in the 1730s emigrated to Brazil from the Azores, and they also tried to grow grapes. Again, not that successful. Finally, however, in 1789, the Portuguese decided to ban the sale of grapes and wine in the country because it was competing with their own sales. So there was a big ban on growing grapes, and they prohibited it. But go ahead about 100 years, and the Italians arrive. And the Italians, as they always do, bring with them grape vines and rootstocks. So they start growing grapes. And they come to southern Brazil in about 1875. Most of the families that I met told me that their families were on this one boat in 1875. I don't know about Cassio and Bruno and the other people in the room, if your families are also from that exact moment in Brazil. So they came in 1875, and they came from two Italian regions. They came from the Veneto and Trentino, which was very interesting to me. I mean, most of you know me, and for those who don't know me, I lived in Italy for 15 years, so Italy is a huge part of my life, and I've been studying Portuguese, but about what I can say is, io sou e uma massa, which means I am and an apple. I'm sort of in the book is on the table phase of my Portuguese study, so not very good. But my Italian is great. So when I was there, it was wonderful because I was able to speak to so many people in Italian and just be able to get through it and, you know, really have good conversations. So it's a very, very, very Italian part of the country. And most of the Brazilians I met consider themselves Italian, which I also thought was very interesting. And, of course, they brought Italian grape varieties with them. There was slavery in Brazil until 1888. I just wanted to put that in there, and Brazilian independence. So let's go ahead, and finally, foreign countries start to invest in Brazil in the 1970s. So Moët Chandon, Martini and Rossi, and Bacardi. And this begins to change the wine region and the wines that are made, because they were being made up until that point only for the local communities and not exported at all. But the foreign countries, they bring in investments, so they bring a lot of great new technology, so the level of the wine also changes. But before the foreign companies were there, I didn't want to not talk about this. There were already big cooperatives in Brazil, for example, Nova Aliança and two other big cooperatives, Aurora and Garibaldi and other ones that had already been in Brazil. But smaller, privately owned family companies were not really exporting their own wines. They were not allowed to. So Brazil began to open up its markets in the 1990s. So it's really recent. It's about 20 years that the wine industry has been open, importing and exporting fine wine. And just a comment about the Italo-Brazilians are the largest population of Italian origin people outside of Italy, which is very, very interesting. And they also speak a dialect. So the Venetian dialect or the dialect from Trentino, it's not just Italian. So that's very interesting. So Brazilian viticulture. This is, I think, a great slide about the industry. So they have 79,000 hectares of vines, and 90% of that is in one state in Brazil. There are 27 states in Brazil, if I'm correct. And most of the wine industry is concentrated in Rio Grande do Sul, so a state in the south of Brazil. And in that state, they make about 54% is red grapes and 46% is white grapes. The big grape varieties are Cabernet and Merlot. They also have Tannat and Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and Moscat. There's a very big Moscato production there as well. They have 136 varieties, and later on we'll talk about some of the other varieties. It's, as I said, they're trying to make it a big wine destination, and they export to around 25 countries. So the average size of a farm in Brazil is about 17.5 hectares, but that is not the average size of the grapes that they have. So the average size is really 3 hectares, so small family farms, which is why there are so many big cooperatives, right? There are a couple of big companies as well, and we're going to be tasting wines from two of the big companies, and they are also outside of the fair at the tables, table 35 and 36. So Miolo and Sauvetal are two very big companies. But then there are also a lot of smaller family-owned wineries. This is Brazil, and these are the wine regions. So when your image of Brazil is probably Rio or Sao Paulo. But the state of Brazil where we are is in the south. So there are 6 wine regions in Brazil. 5 of them are located in the south, and 1 of them is located in the north. So the ones in purple that you can see are the emerging wine regions. So they are starting to become more interesting, but are not really wines that are exported. That's not really yet where people are growing their wines, but the wine industry is growing. Right now, as I said before, it involves 150,000 people, but there's a lot of interest in it all around. So the traditional wine regions are Serra Gaúcha, which is the largest wine region, and it makes about 85% of the wines in Brazil. Then we have the other ones, which I will talk about slowly, but let's just stay with Serra Gaúcha. So there is one area in Brazil that has an appellation, controlled appellation. It's called Vale dos Vinhedos, and it's in Serra Gaúcha. And then there are 4 other geographical indications at the moment. The one really important one is called Farroupilha, hard to pronounce. And they're very well known for their Moscato. Another one is Punta Bandera, which is very well known for their Chardonnay and their Pinot Noir. And it's a high altitude vineyard. So that's this, we have a map somewhere, but I don't know if it's in your book, I think also. But this is an important slide to remember. And then Vale do São Francisco is the largest tropical vineyard area in the world. I'm trying to say that well, but you know, my Portuguese is what it is. So we'll see. So Serra Gaúcha, the largest wine region. So the cities, Bento Gonzalez is the city that I visited when I was there, and most wine journalists will visit that city. When you go in, there's a big barrel as an entrance to the city. It's a really beautiful wine destination, and they have a lot of nice hotels also. And as I said, it's responsible for 85% of Brazilian wine production. It's a high altitude region as well. It's 400 meters to 800 meters, or around 1,500 feet to 2,500 feet. And it's great for whites, sparkling wines, and early grapes, meaning grapes that you can pick early. The climate is temperate, it's humid, but you know, it's not the way you might think it was. I was there in the summer, because January is, of course, the summer. It was around 75 degrees. It was not 100 degrees. It was much more comfortable than it was in New York in the summer, this summer. There is a risk of hail and frost. Those are some of the problems that they have, and the soils are basaltic soils. So the grapes, Rafael is opening wine for you. We will be tasting wine as I talk to you. So the grapes in this region are Chardonnay, Moscato, and a grape that is very well known in Brazil is Riesling Italico, which is Italian Riesling. It is not the same grape variety as Riesling Renano, which is German Riesling. It's delicious, and for example, Peter Longo, Cassios, has a wine that the blend is Chardonnay and Riesling Italico, and it's a really lovely blend, and the Riesling Italico makes it sort of a softer, rounder, sparkling wine. I like it a lot, and it was something that I found only in Brazil, So I found a lot of wines that were either Chardonnay and Riesling Italico or Chardonnay, Riesling Italico, and Pinot Noir, which was a new blend for me, and I kind of think that could be a signature Brazilian sparkling wine blend.
Excuse me. Riesling Italico, is that also in Italy?
Yes, there's the Riesling Italico in Italy.
Where do you usually see that?
In the Trentino.
In the Trentino, that makes sense.
Yeah,
absolutely. And how does it differ from German Riesling?
It's much rounder. It's not sort of angular in your mouth. It's just like kind of a wider, fleshier, more like Welsh Riesling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I mean, that's my experience. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, that's the inner Brazilian, like, yes, sure, exactly what you say. I like that. Thank you. You're right. Great. So they also make Glera. The grape that is used in Prosecco, and Malvasia, and Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc, Tanat, and Ancelotta, showing again their Italian heritage, which is, I think, very interesting. It's beautiful. This is the hotel I stayed in. It's the Vinedos Spa Do, no, Spa dos Vinedos, and it's beautiful, and you look out your window, and you have this, like, amazing, gorgeous grapevines, and you see Miolo is right in front of this this hotel, and it's just incredibly beautiful, rolling hill kind of countryside that reminded me of being in the Veneto, and I was very surprised. That was not what I had expected.
Or Napa Valley.
Or Napa Valley, true.
It looks like Napa Valley.
True, it does look like the Napa Valley. I must say, even though I am American, I am much more familiar with Italy because I lived there for a long time, so my references are usually Italian-oriented, and I'm embarrassed to say I've definitely been to Napa a few times, but that is not what first comes to mind. But yes, and I'm sure they would love to be considered the Napa of Brazil. I mean, who wouldn't want to be considered the Napa of Brazil? So we're going to taste this cuvée from Miolo. Miolo is a very old winery in Brazil by Brazilian standards. Not a very old winery in terms of Italy or others, but family, of course, of Italian origin. They used to sell their grapes to the co-ops. And then at a certain point, the family decided to go out and use their own branding. And they're a very big company, and they are serving their wines outside. Their wines are widely available in the United States as well. I didn't mention this before, but in terms of the winemaking in Brazil, they do traditional method sparkling wine, they do Charmat method sparkling wine, and they also use the Asti process. So they basically, Diego, who works at Wines in Brazil with Rafael, was saying, we have sparkling wine for every sparkling wine taste. So whether you want a young and fruity one, whether you want more of a yeasty, older, old world style one, you want to do one of Muscatel, they have all different kinds of sparkling wine. So this one is 50% Chardonnay and 50% Pinot Noir. It spends 12 months on the lees for bottling. What do you think?
Nice. What is the price point?
The price point on this one is around 18. They're really very nice, very nice wines for the price. And there was a sparkling wine that I was hoping to give to you, but I wasn't able to get it. It's around 15. It's a rosé, a sparkling rosé, because they also make sparkling rosé. The price point is great, I think. All of the wines are at around 15. Some are even less. Some of the Charmat method. So this is from the Valle dos Vinhedos. So this is a traditional. They're a nice winery. This winery, Miolo, is in front of that spa hotel that I stayed at. We're going to taste a wine from a different winery when you're done with this. 50% Chardonnay and 50% Pinot Noir. So the Brazilian taste, until recently, has been for sweeter wines than, just like in America, people start out with sweet wines and then sort of begin to like drier and drier wines. So they are still a young wine drinking country. I could be wrong, but I believe that the average Brazilian only drinks 2 liters of wine a year.
Yeah,
that's about what one of us drinks a week.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not going to say a day, but that's about.
Like, okay,
a
That's
why. So they drink a lot more.
I'm floored.
They drink a lot of beer, and they drink cachaça. But so yes, so they're. What? Remember, it's a very big country. I am not sure what the population of Brazil is. I know it's the fifth largest country in the world. Do you know what the population of Brazil is? 200 million. I read today that it is the fifth most populous country in the world. So Brazil is a huge country. So the fact that they only drink 2 liters of wine a year means that someone like Rafael, Cassio, or Bruno is drinking a lot more to keep to maintain that average. You're doing your part.
There's a lot to export.
There's a lot of wine to export. Well, there are wines that are made just for the domestic market, that are sweeter, and then there are wines that they're making for the export market.
Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, dracenawines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank.
So, as I was saying, there are two very big companies, Miolo and Salton. This is a Pinot Noir from Salton. I visited both Miolo and Salton. I was lucky to visit them this January, and I was with two wine writers who will remain nameless, who were like, oh, don't show us the bottling line. We've seen so many bottling lines in our lives, I don't want to see the bottling line. So they spent 45 minutes looking at the bottling line at Sauternes because there it's so extensive and interesting, and it's all automated, and they have 4 different bottling lines that are bottling different products at the exact same time, and no human hands touch anything. It's just like something picks up a bottle, puts it on the cart, fills it, labels it, bottles it, packages it, and then sends it off. It was really, I must say, an amazingly automated system that they use. So it's a very big winery. That's what I was trying to say. They have these walkways at the top that show you what's going on. And again, an old family. I believe Sauternes' family is from Trentino. And I think that the winery is from around 1937. They make a lot of different kinds of products, and I think that they are most well known for their sparkling wine, which is not what you're tasting. You're tasting Pinot Noir, but they are a very large sparkling producer and in Brazil, but they only export 2% of their production. So this is a Pinot Noir. I will tell you what I think of a Pinot Noir, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Not very fruit forward.
Not very, more restrained. Would you know this is a New World wine? If you were tasting this blonde?
No.
I would think it was a modern version of an old world, like a Languedoc as opposed to a Burgundy.
Interesting. I agree with that.
Definitely doesn't taste like a Burgundy.
No, but would you know that it was a new world? Would you think you would know? You would think Chile?
No. Oh, maybe.
I would think so. I think Uruguay or Argentina.
Interesting.
But on the higher end of the regions.
Interesting. It's nice, though. I think it's very nice, whether it's New World or Old World. It's a nice, interesting version of Pinot Noir.
It's varietally correct.
Varietally correct, which we all want. So before I talk about the next wine, I'm going to talk some more about the different regions, and then you'll taste the third wine, because we don't have so many wines. I have a little more time. So another region, the second region in Brazil for wine out of the six, is called Campos de Cima da Serra, which means the top of the Serra. And it is at 900 meters to 1,100 meters, so really high vineyards, almost 3,000 feet to 3,600 feet. This is an area that a lot of people are putting investments in because they're investing in the wine industry. A lot of different companies are investing here. Very high altitude vineyards, a little colder. They have colder weather up there, so they grow more Pinot Noir. Buds start late, harvest, risk of frost. I did not visit anywhere here, but it's a flatland at at altitude. So,
like Argentina.
Yes, and they also make Sauvignon Blanc here, which I think is very interesting. Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier, Chardonnay, Pinot Grigio, and Gewurztraminer. As I mentioned, there are 136 varieties that are being grown in Brazil. So they're sort of growing a lot of different stuff from all their years in all the countries that immigrants have come to Brazil from. And they make Pinot Noir and Merlot and Cabernet and Tanat and also Petit Verdot. So it has higher sun exposure and lower rainfall than Serra Gaúcha. The wines, I think, have more acidity and the alcohol is a little bit more moderate. So that's an area to watch in Brazil. It's right here, right near Serra Gaúcha. So people were working in Serra Gaúcha, and if they want to expand their investments, they've moved to this area right next door. Serra do Sudeste region is another region. This region is mostly all vineyards. Again, wineries in Serra Gaúcha who needed to expand their vineyard lands have moved into Serra do Sudeste. It is a lower altitude region. It has gentle slopes, temperate climate, and the soils are granite and limestone. So in the 80s, different wineries such as Lijo Cajaro, they have vineyards here. Another winery, Neta Longo, has two. But maybe, would you like to say something about Serra do Sudeste?
It's a very good particular vineyard too, and completely different of the Serra Gaúcha.
And is it mostly Pinot Noir and Chardonnay?
Yeah.
So mostly vineyards and gentle slopes.
Is this the coolest climate area?
No, it is not the coolest. That's Plebtan Alto, the hard one to say, Catarinense. Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Malvasia di Candida, Gewurztraminer, and Cabernet Franc, and all these different amazing grape varieties. I don't know that I've ever had an Arena. But now Noah, I don't know if anyone else has. That's a new grape variety to me.
Portuguese?
Maybe. I don't know. I've never had that one. Anyway, so a lot of different grape varieties. So Campania region is right near Uruguay and Argentina, which is interesting. And the soils have sort of medium fertility, good drainage, good thermal. There's a missing some letter in there. Some of the oldest vineyards in Brazil, and you are now going to try a Tanat from there. And I'm interested to hear what you guys think about this Tanat as opposed to Tanat from Uruguay, if you have tried Tanat from Uruguay.
Or France.
Your friends.
Or France.
Or France, yes, or France. But because this is, it's right on the border with Uruguay, I just kind of think of it like comparatively to that. But yes, you're right, from Cahors. Yes.
True.
So these vineyards are much lower. They're about 300 feet to 1,100 feet, which is not small, but short. And the soils are different. They're sandstone, clay, and sand. And a lot of wineries also are developing vineyards in this area. But they're growing mostly red grapes.
And all of this is, there's no phylloxera down there.
There's no phylloxera, but they're all planted on, you know, American rootstocks. The industry is planted on American rootstocks here as well. Actually, when I was in Brazil, and since I've been here, nobody has really talked to me about the different parasites and pests, you know, the pests that are troublesome in Brazil. So now that we have our friends in the back, what parasites or problems do you have in the vineyards in Brazil? You have none, right? They have none. Well, that's what I was going to say. Apparently, there's no problem with pests.
No mildew.
No mildew. There are no problems in Brazil in terms of the grapes. Because nobody has ever mentioned anything to me about this. But maybe that's just because they're... Maybe, but it's, I don't mean just in Campania. I mean in Brazil in general. So... I think maybe they're just not up to talking about that yet.
Some problems you have is, I don't know how to call it, but big ants, you know. This.
Big ants?
Ants. This is usually you have to control.
Ants.
Yeah.
That's a pest.
That's a pest?
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Ants is a pest. I'll go with ants. Okay. Ants? Okay. So I didn't mention, but they also grow Tempranillo in Brazil. Of course. You know, couldn't have that.
Oh, by the way, this tanat is actually closer to a French tanat than to an Uruguay tanat.
Yes.
And it's French oak, right?
It does have French oak. It's beautiful.
It's
I love their tanat, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's really nice. I think the tanat is really nice for Brazil. And I'm not sure if that's going to be an easy sell to the Americans, tanat from Brazil, but I think it should be because it's very nice. I find it less rustic than the one from Uruguay, not as alcoholic, easier to drink. Some of the nice qualities that I get from Tanat from France or from some of the ones from Uruguay, but often the ones from Uruguay, I feel like they're hitting me over the head with a big piece of wood. But I think this is a nice version of Tanat, and I could definitely see this selling well once people start liking Tanat. I think it's an alternative to Uruguay's Tanat. I've also... They also grow Marsillon. Has anyone had Marsillon?
Mm-hmm.
So Marsillon is a cross between Grenache and Cabernet Sauvignon, which I really like. Also very hard to sell, but they grow a lot of it in Brazil. They also grow a lot of Tiraldigo in Brazil, which shows their Italian origin. The price point should be around 20. So I was asking Rafael if the word gaucho on a horse came from this area of Brazil, but did you say yes or no?
Yes,
I think so. I think that's where it's from. So this is what it looks like in this area of Brazil, which is so surprising to me. It's really amazing that it looks this way. So these are the highest vineyards. Was that your question? So Planalto Catarinense region is the highest.
So they're also therefore the coldest?
Yes.
I thought the ones further south might be colder.
It is the rainiest.
But it says the lowest temperatures there.
Yes, because it's a high altitude plain, right? We did not visit this. The wineries here is more, they say, based on entrepreneurship and tradition, meaning that the families did not originally arrive here and plant grapes. So this is a newer region in terms of Brazilian viticulture. The more acidic soils with lower fertility. So harder to grow grapes in. So here they grow Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, and lots of other grapes, including Nebbiolo, which, lots and lots of grapes, and Trincadera, and Toriga Nacional, which is something we should have talked about before because, of course, Portuguese heritage here. So they grow a lot of that. And it snows in this region. So I don't know, can people ski here?
No.
Is there any skiing in Brazil?
No.
Artificial.
Artificial.
At the mall, some powerful.
All right. That sounds fine. So the last area, the last grape-growing region in Brazil that we're going to talk about today is the Vale do São Francisco region, which is in the north. And it is the largest tropical vineyard in the world. And... it's very dry, high sun exposure, and they have a lot of fruit production in this part of Brazil. They make sparkling wine, and of course they irrigate, and they have alkaline soils. So I love this picture, which I'm going to show you in a minute, The climate conditions allow for controlling of the production cycle. So they have a very specialized workforce because they're always growing grapes throughout the year and harvesting.
The two harvests?
Two harvests. They do two harvests a year. And so in one vineyard, so this is one vineyard,
wow,
so it's a continuous cycle. And they can do this through irrigation and pruning. So one part of the vineyard is the summer, another part of the vineyard is winter, another part is autumn, and another part is spring. So the people who work in these vineyards, of course, are very specialized. And I think that's something that you only see in Brazil. Actually, with climate change, we may see that in other parts of the world, too. Let me take that back. But at the moment, we see this in Brazil. So I think I was really excited when I learned that. I thought that was something very different that I knew nothing about. And I was excited about that. So, all right. So this is a fun little chess game that I guess Maurizio, who is a sommelier who works with wines in Brazil, put together as sort of an image of the Brazilian wine industry. So the king, of course, it should be the queen. It was just International Women's Day, but we'll land the king. Are the sparkling wines, and that's sparkling wines made in the traditional or the Charmat method. And the queen is Merlot, because that's what they're really pushing right now and really interested in promoting. And then the bishops are Moscato-based sparkling wines that. And then the knights are the red wines. They don't have a picture of Touriga Nacional up there, but I think they should. So Cabernet, Tanat, Pinot Noir, and Touriga. And then this is to show you all of them. Well, at least you have a sense of humor to put this together. Who is that soccer player?
Cristiano.
He's not used to seeing him not in that underwear commercial. I'm like,
who is that?
You're right next to him with his clothes on.
Yes, exactly. That's what I started trying to say. But anyway, Portugal, Spain, Italy. And then the castles are all of the white ones that they make in Brazil. So Riesling Italico, Moscato Chardonnay, Viognier, Sauvignon Blanc, and Alvarinho. And then, this is a whole other aspect of the industry which we have not discussed, but maybe Nova Alianza can discuss it with us. Grape juice. Mm-hmm. So grape juice, which Nova Alianza, which is a big co-op in Brazil, half of their production, and many, many, many wine producers in Brazil also make grape juice. So it's a huge industry in Brazil, just grape juice. And the grape juice is totally different from grape juice here in the United States. It is not sugary. It's delicious. And they're doing a big push on their grape juice soon, too. And those are the ponds that will help advance the rest of the scam, the chessboard. So that is the industry. And just about grape juice, my son, I never let him drink grape juice because I don't like the American kind of grape juice with lots of sugar. But this was delicious, and I brought home a little package of it, and he really liked it. And it's, I'm thinking about dry January. You don't have to give up your juice. So thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And I hope you try let's try a different one. Great. So let's go back to Tanat. I'm sorry I don't have that tech sheet up right now, but I will. Let's go back to this. But so these are the areas in purple that are emerging, and I just think it's very interesting, and when you go there, you'll see why it's such an interesting wine destination that should be on your bucket list of places to go. Very sort of place you can speak your Venetian or Trentino dialect, which is also strange. I ate risotto every day for lunch in the summer. And I came home, I gained like 4 pounds from like a week in Brazil. And I thought, what? I thought I just, have kind of too much meat. But no, I had too much risotto. I mean, that was like the last thing in the world that I was thinking would be happening. But it's an exciting country, and the wine business is really young. So we'll see where they go. They're really doing a big push on promoting, you know, sparkling wine and sparkling wine destination.
Sure. Yeah, I had a question about the reds and the aging protocol that they normally go through. And
which are the ones that you've tried?
You know, just in general. I mean, are they doing
so
a lot of barrel aging?
They are doing a lot of barrel aging. They're doing a lot of barrel aging. I had done a tasting of wines of Brazil in 2013 with Snooth and like a fall blogger grouping. I don't know if any of you were there. Were you there, Jim? You were there. So I remember tasting the wines and thinking they were super oaky. And I remember really liking some of the sparkling wines. And I looked back at my notes after I met and visited Wines of Brazil, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I think they used to use a lot more oak, and just like everywhere else, they're kind of moving away from oak. Is that what you find, Cassio? Are people moving away from using as much sort of heavy oak?
Yeah, it's changing a bit.
It's changing.
Mostly, the most, 10 or 12 months of oak.
On oak, okay.
Yeah.
And they're also, I forgot to mention this, so one of the other things that Brazil is promoting is, in addition to sparkling, that their wines are low alcohol. So you don't find 15% alcohol. You find really, you know, 13, 12 and a half. So that's nice. I like that direction of lower alcohol wines. I find them easier to digest and to drink and to pair with food. Of course, their cuisine is heavily meat-oriented, but we all know that. And in the South, heavily Italian-oriented in terms of the foods. And trying to think about the oak aging. So I did see some very fancy and enormous, you know, cellars, like at Valduga, which is another very big winery, at Miolo and at Salton. But not all of the wine is aged in oak barrels. And mostly a mix, French and American, you know, dependent on. And somebody was talking about Slavonian oak. I don't remember right this minute who it was, one of them. But I don't think there is an indigenous barrel in Brazil. And I don't actually know if there are cooperages in South America where people buy wood. Does anyone?
I have no idea.
I don't know if there's any, you know, if there are cooperages there. And most of it is under cork. What's sort of going on with screw cap in, I guess, table wines, which are the sweeter juice, is under screw cap. But most fine wine is with cork in Brazil,
yes,
would you say?
Correct.
Correct, yes?
Fine?
Yeah, the finest wines are...
with cork, not under screw cap.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Anybody doing stainless or concrete?
I didn't see any concrete eggs, but I mean, yeah, concrete eggs, but I did see people do have old concrete, of course, and they use it. And a lot of people use stainless. Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Susanna, is there phylloxera there?
I think there was phylloxera there, so they are grafted onto American rootstocks. In fact, I didn't put it into my sort of history of Brazil, and I don't think you were here when we were talking about that, but. At a certain point, they planted, before they planted Vitis vinifera, they were planting hybrid American hybrid grapes. Mm. And they didn't really take off. So, you know, they've been a wine, it's not quite the history of South Africa, but they also were a wine-producing region early on, and then for a whole host of different reasons, were not producing wine. So it's a very young industry. It's really the last 20 years. They've been producing wine. Any other questions? What did you think of this last wine? Did you like it? Did you like it? You like the second one better?
The first
one better. You like the first one better? Did you find this oakier?
It's more closer to the tannat of Uruguay.
Okay, well, so these are two different expressions of tannat.
Not as rustic as Uruguay, but definitely closer.
Right, towards that direction, more New World. Well, you know, that's interesting. And they also, Brazil has this, they like to drink wine in this glass.
It's
this is like the Brazil glass. I don't know why, but they really like to drink their wines in this glass. So this is the Brazil glass. And,
it's a very nice glass.
They like that a lot. And they're also trying to get away from the sort of Brazil is only samba and carnival. And, you know, it's a serious country. Fun is good, but, you know, fun, pleasure, sparkling wine, kind of fun. You know, a serious wine drinking and wine exporting country. So we'll see. how long it takes to catch up to some of the other sparkling destinations, but it should be on your radar for your next wine trip, because it is really beautiful. And the roads were pretty, I thought the roads were fine in terms of driving around on your own and making appointments, and a lot of places have tasting rooms, and they seemed really open to visitors, which is nice. So thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I hope you learned something, enjoyed it. I will definitely send you guys.
Thanks for listening to Dracaena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracaenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracaenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracaena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracaenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!